GrowCFO is where finance leaders grow together. Join thousands of like-minded professionals using GrowCFO to access the combined knowledge and experience of the finance leader community. You can join us today at growcfo.net. Hello and welcome to the GrowCFO show for the second part of our series on scaling FP&A. Well, in actual fact, it's part three because this started with a webinar that Dan Wells chaired with Catherine Marks, Christine Wittig, and Planful's Mark Ellis. And you can see that on the GrowCFO website if you want to go back to it. But in podcast terms, in the last episode, we talked about building a team. This episode, we're going to talk about getting the infrastructure right. And lined up for you in episode three of the series, the final part is navigating an acquisition. Should be exciting. But hey, getting the infrastructure right. And who better to talk to about getting the infrastructure right is our old friend, Paul Barnhurst, the FP&A guy. Welcome back to the show, Paul.
Kevin, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be back to chat with you again and look forward to the conversation.
So, Paul, the last time we spoke on this podcast was your very, very first day as the FP&A guy. So tell me a little bit about the FP&A guy. What does he do? And why are you the relevant person to be really talking to on this particular episode?
Yeah, so I run a company obviously called The FP&A Guy. My website is called thefpandaguy.com. It was a branding that came from LinkedIn. One day I used it as a hashtag and it ended up sticking. So it's the brand now. And as far as, you know, FP&A goes, there's a number of different things I do, from training to running a community. But one of the biggest things I'm known for and that I've done a lot with is around software tools. I've talked to probably 100 companies, well over 60 CEOs. I've seen demos of 100 tools. I've released a market guide, and I'm getting ready to release two more in the coming months around FP&A software tools. So I've really have invested a lot of time to learn about the market, learn what's out there, how to segment it, how to think about it, all those type of things.
Brilliant. So also with me on this episode, as I've had for the last two episodes, is Catherine Marks. Catherine, now you've used FP&A tools in the past, but now, what do you find is the issue in this area that means that we need to go talk to an expert like Paul?
Oh, so many issues. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to getting stuck into this episode further. I've used a few different tools myself. So from sort of the more traditional bigger players down to some of those mid-market tools. And I think there's a lot that we'll get into around, it's not just the tool itself, but thinking around the ecosystem around that, the processes, the data and so on. But why I'm really excited that we also got Paul on this podcast is hearing about his experience with those sort of third generation tools that are out there, which I think are really interesting for our audience.
Brilliant. And back in the day, I used to do this sort of stuff in PwC consulting, but it wasn't even called FP&A there then. It was so much in its infancy. And kind of we as a team in PwC knew about those key planning, budgeting and forecasting tools, what they all did and how they worked. But back in the day, there were only three or four of them. And most of us just did it on an Excel spreadsheet anyway. So I'm really keen to find out, you know, what's going on in 2024 in this area. So, Paul, what should we be thinking about if we're going to introduce a new FP&A system? You have pillars of FP&A tools. Can you tell us about those?
Yeah. So, you know, starting, I think when introducing a new system, I always like to say it's people, it's process, and then it's system or platform, if you want to call it PPP. Sometimes people will use that. Technology is the enabler. And I think that's really important for people to realize. If you don't get the people, the right skills, the right processes, you're just wasting a bunch of money. Because I like to say old processes plus new technology equals expensive, old, broken processes. You know, that's the first thing you have to remember. And the second is there, you know, I like to call it four pillars, or I almost think of it as a pyramid. There's some core things you need in an FP&A tool. It always starts with the data model. And that's your base layer. And then from there, you have your modeling. So you bring in your data model, your data management, all your different systems, and how can it model for you? You know, is it really good at multidimensional? Is it a spreadsheet? What options does it have? From there, from the modeling, you have that reporting layer, you know, dashboard reporting. Everybody needs it. Some tools will say, hey, I want to be a BI tool. Some will say, hey, we want to make it really easy to send it to the BI and give you some basic reporting, but you need that capability. And then on top of that, you have what I'll call your workflow and collaboration, right? You got to be able to approve things. You got to be able to have those comments and discussions with the business and with finance. And then really today, I think of one other thing that kind of flows throughout all of it, and that's how are you using AI, machine learning, generative AI, right? That's critical to software today, is to at least have a strategy for that and how you're thinking about that to make people more productive.
Brilliant. So thinking, Catherine, smaller, fast-growing organizations that are probably typical of a lot of the folk that we see around the Grow CFO community, what do we need to think about there? There's a chance that if you're growing fast, you can be outgrowing your tools very quickly.
Yeah, indeed. So what I would do is to take those pillars that Paul was talking about and think about those in the context of the organization that you expect to be in 3 years' time. What's your organization strategy? What might the business look like 3 years from now? And what are they going to need from FP&A to support that? What other systems are you using in the organization? What's on the horizon in terms of any changes? Of course, we won't get everything right, but we can at least have a directional view. And really the most important thing is agility. You know, things are going to change in the business, and what we don't want to end up with is something that's so inflexible or that we need expensive consultants to come back and update every time we want to change something. Ask ourselves, is the system a low-code, no-code model? Do we have flexibility to easily build our own custom templates? You know, otherwise, there's a risk we just end up doing everything back in Excel, right?
I was just going to say, is there a risk when we're talking inflexibility that folks say, oh, well, we can do anything we want in Excel. We'll just stick with Excel.
Yes, indeed. And Excel is a great tool. It absolutely has its place. And I don't think we necessarily need to be getting rid of it in its entirety. But it also has its limitations. It doesn't integrate well with other systems. It's not a database. We've all been there when, you know, Excel crashes on us and when our financial models take on a life of their own.
And I've been in that position where, because there was one tiny formula wrong right in the middle of a costing model, that the entire answer coming out of the model was wrong. And nobody realized it until it was too late. Excel models are very, very difficult to test and make sure there are no mistakes in them. And certainly in wearing a consultant's hat, I was always very, very reluctant to hand anything over that had been built in a spreadsheet to a client. Because, fine, we'll use this spreadsheet to give certain answers during the project and we can sense check those answers. But there's a huge risk of giving this to the client later, the client doing something else with it and it producing the wrong information. Yeah. And fortunately, it wasn't in a consulting experience. I learned by bitter experience about getting Excel models wrong. It was working with my own company, but it can have huge consequences. But yeah. Paul, that probably takes us back into the world of FP&A tools. Now, you talked in the introduction about the latest guide that you've written. That's talking a lot about the third generation tools that are out. So what have you learned this time around from updating the guide?
You know, I've learned a ton. It's been the most involved process I've done yet. We're much more ambitious this year than last year. You know, and there's so many tools out there. I think we started with a list of 80 potential, narrowed it down to 50 something, sent out surveys. From there, we got, you know, 30 something responses back, 36, 37, ended up narrowing it down to between 10 and 15 tools that we put in the main guide. And from there, we did a second survey. We asked each of them to provide three customer surveys. The majority of them gave us access to the tool or walked us through that. We did a founder story. We did a demo. We reviewed other sources online. And we have a two-page write-up on each of these tools. So I learned a lot more the strengths and weaknesses of the tools this time. The last time we did a demo, we did a founder story. But this time I got to get my hands on a bunch of the tools and kind of at least get a feel for how they work. So it was an incredibly time-consuming process. Just sent it over to one of my co-authors to give to the publisher. So we're hoping to have it out here sometime in early March. We're probably about 3 weeks away. And so, I mean, the other thing I learned is I think how different each tool is and how important it is that people really do a good job during the process of knowing what they need. Because there are a lot of great tools out there. But a great tool may be a terrible tool for you, depending on your team, your skills, your systems, your use case, et cetera. So it really highlighted, you know, the importance of having a way to try to narrow down at such a crowded market and think about the different tools and what makes sense for your business. Like the things Catherine mentioned, how quick am I growing? Where am I going to be in 3 years and 5 years? You know, what's important to me? Do I want to be in Excel? Do I want a replacement for spreadsheets? Do I want some kind of integrated solution that works on top of a business intelligence tool? And the list goes on, but there's a lot of learning that took place this time really about the tools and getting deeper into them.
So just delving a little bit deeper into that, and I can remember putting a similar guide together back in my PwC days, but I think it only had four tools in it.
I wish there was only four. I would have been done a long time ago.
Yeah. So I'm there. I'm picking up your guides, Paul, and I'm thinking I do need to select a tool. So tell me, how do I get from that list of 50 that you've reviewed to working out, well, which one or two are right for me?
Yeah. So what I like to tell people when they're trying to select a tool is there's a few things to keep in mind. First, we'll talk big picture and then I'll go a little deeper. You know, the first is, are you a small market, mid-market, enterprise company? That's going to make a difference. If you're an enterprise company, you're not going to use a tool like Forecaster or Giraffe that's designed for a couple hundred employees, right? Just doesn't make sense. So first, you can segment the market quite a bit by knowing where you are and knowing, you know, how much you're growing. That should allow you to kind of narrow down that choice, because some tools are much more appropriate for certain use cases. You know, second, are you in a specific industry? Are there any industry-specific tools? You talk SaaS, Drivetrain, Mosaic are really designed for the SaaS market. There's others that do a good job there. And there's one specifically designed for e-commerce or mostly not-for-profits. So that can help you as well. And then what I like to tell people in thinking about tools, are you just wanting a database around your spreadsheet? Like, do you want to stay in Excel or Google Sheets? There's a list of tools that do that. They're really designed to just help you keep your models and give you the database stuff you need to better manage your integrations, your reporting, workflow, privacy, all those things that come with the database, all the way up to something like an Anaplan or a Pigment where, hey, we're going to be a complete replacement for your spreadsheet. And then there's stuff that's kind of in between. We're a web app. Hey, we integrate really well with Excel. Take IBM or TM1 as example, and we integrate a little bit. And so I tell people, okay, where do you want to be? Do you want a spreadsheet? Do you want a replacement for it? What size are you? And that allows you to at least narrow down the set. And then there's things like, okay, what systems do I need to connect to? How complex are my processes? The more complex processes, the more customization, the more you're going to need to go for a larger scalable tool. The more you may have a very standard process, one of these smaller tools that have a lot of templates that's very quick to implement, may be the way to go. So that's usually some of the advice I give people to think about. You know, other things they need to consider is, what ERP am I on? Like if you're still all on-prem, I generally recommend people look at what I'll call first or second generation tools, because they have a lot more experience with onboarding someone on-prem. Many of the third gen have really focused on cloud. So those are some of the things to really be thinking about beyond, obviously, you want to be able to maintain it yourself. You know, how much of it is low code, no code? Can I really own it? Or am I going to turn around and go back to the consultant every other week, which nobody wants to do? Those are some of the things I like to think about, but I like to kind of start with trying to segment and narrow it down. You know, other questions to ask, is it just financial planning? Or do you want to do all your planning? Are you wanting to do sales operations in there, revenue operations, supply chain? If that's the case, you're going to need a more robust tool. You're going to need to look at that. So those are some of the things that can really help you narrow it down to a reasonable set. So then you can, you know, do some research from there.
Brilliant, Paul. I'm really looking forward to getting my hands, or the Grow CFO hands, on the latest version of your guide. Now, you said this is coming out in about 3 weeks, which probably by the time we actually publish, it'll be out. So can we put a link in the show notes?
I'll give you the link as soon as I have it. I don't have one yet, but I'll give it to you as soon as I have it.
Brilliant. So, Catherine, we've selected this system. We've got it implemented. And we've flicked the on switch. How do we get started using this thing to get the most out of it?
I'll answer that in two ways, Kevin. So we get the most out of it really by doing the pre-work. You know, implementing the system is just one step. And we see a lot of software projects failing to deliver their promised value. Don't invest in a system without reflecting on the foundations and doing your homework first, as well as some of the other considerations that Paul was talking about. A lot of it comes down to data. We see so many organizations getting stuck here because they haven't invested in getting it right. It's so fundamental and worth the effort. You know, think about, what are the drivers? What are the KPIs that you need to effectively manage the business? And is your data organized accordingly? This is where a lot of the effort can lie.
I can second that from loads and loads of consulting experience, where the project back in the day was, oh, will you implement us a balanced scorecard, please? Coming along on the scene at that time were the first software packages that would do balanced scorecards or nice dashboards. And I certainly noted people thinking, oh, we'll have one of these dashboards, we'll just buy the software. But the thought had never gone into, what do we actually want to put on the dashboard? So the consulting piece of work would do exactly what you've described. We'd go back to, well, what's your strategy? Okay, tell me what the KPIs are, or maybe these days the OKRs are, to deliver that strategy. Then we can think about finding the data. And back in the day then, we had, the big difference from now was lack of data, which has been turned around now into too much data. Which bits of it are important? So I think to get this right, absolutely echo what you're saying. First of all, work out what on earth it is that you want to measure.
Yep, absolutely. And as you say, the problem is rarely now that we don't have enough data. It's exactly the opposite. So do spend some time thinking that through. I think, you know, the second strand of that is having a champion. It's not only important as part of a selection process, it's really important to have an end user involved, but also once you're up and running, so that you're really clear, you know, what that system can do, and you can action changes, help other users quickly, so we avoid falling back into that Excel workaround trap. And the other thing I'd just add to that is, it's retaining the mindset of how the tool can work better to support us. You know, don't forget that it's exactly that, a tool. Our systems and processes should adapt to us as we grow, not the other way around.
Absolutely. And I would always say to clients that were looking at putting the dashboard together, well, look, let's work out what's going to be on the dashboard. We can even mock this up in Excel to start off with, so we can figure out what it's going to look like. That might get us asking some of the questions about where on earth is the data coming from to put in this. Then when we've got that put together, we can then select the system that's appropriate to what we actually want to do. You know,
doing that thinking through of what all the metrics are really crystallizes you on what the tech should be. So we're thinking about how to get the most out of systems. Paul, there's an awful lot around now about machine learning, AI, so on. How is that being integrated into these third generation systems to help us?
Yeah, I mean, I think every tool is still trying to figure out how best they want to implement it. But what does that look like? All of them have either done some implementation or have plans for it. So I think there's really, you almost want to look at it in three ways. You have your general AI, you have your generative AI. And where you're seeing generative AI mostly being used is to help you query the database, return answers, dig into things, you know, write commentary. I've seen some that have storyboarding tools where, hey, they bring the graph and try to help you write the story. I've seen tools that are experimenting using it to help you build your data model, you know, to help implement a tool, and different ways where you can ask those questions and get those answers back. When you talk machine learning, you know, we've been seeing that for years being used. I think two of the companies have done a really good job, Facebook, Microsoft. They both released open source algorithms they've built to help with their FP&A forecasting. Microsoft has one called Fin, and I believe the one Facebook did was called Prophet. And they're both, like I said, open source out there for people to use. Microsoft has found it's improved their revenue forecasting quite a bit. And so I think more and more tools are adding some of those algorithms in different ways to help predict, whether it be revenue, whether it be retention, different cohort customer analysis. They're bringing that machine learning in various ways. I've seen some that do a Monte Carlo simulation and some other technical simulations and score your plan and say, hey, if you make the following changes, you have a higher chance of success based on your key inputs. So you're seeing it being used a lot of different ways. And then, you know, you have general AI beyond generative to help with identifying anomalies and patterns and different things. So I think every tool is still finding different ways to bring that out, bring that in and figure out what works best. We're just moving so fast. But the bottom line is it's changing the way we work. It's going to make us more productive. And I think in time, it should help a lot with the data cleansing, the data prep, which is where, unfortunately, way too much time is spent in FP&A and data analysis in general around cleaning the data.
Yeah. Gosh, a lot of that, Paul, was way over my head of where it's got to versus in the past. And I remember 15 years ago building Excel models that had Monte Carlo simulations built in, but not really with any machine learning at all. But so there's a lot there to get into. And models from Microsoft, from Facebook that are open source. Catherine, how do we even get started with any of this machine learning?
Yeah, it's a great question. A whole new world for many of us, Kevin. I think it all starts off really with thinking through the use cases and benefits that machine learning and AI can bring. You know, what are we trying to achieve and where does it make sense to invest time and money in doing that in your organization? And starting small, recognizing that AI isn't going to solve everything. It's not going to be a silver bullet. And we certainly shouldn't try to solve everything all at once. So perhaps if you have existing tools with embedded AI capability or those that you're looking to purchase in the near future, use those as experiments. Adopt an experimentation mindset, knowing that your AI has still got a long way to go, as has our learning curve. And not all pilots are going to be successful. You can start to experiment with Copilot. It's early days and it's probably not for rolling out to your whole finance team yet. But, you know, have an early adopter or a few, depending on the size of your team, and start seeing what it can do. There was a great Grow CFO webinar recently, in fact, on unlocking the power of Copilot's data-driven insights, which I definitely recommend.
That was a fantastic one. As a result of that, both Dan Wells and myself both signed up for Copilot Pro. We've both started using it. But, you know, I think I've got into less than 0.5% of what Copilot can potentially do in the last 3 weeks. And I've tried it a little bit in Word. I haven't even delved in where it goes to in PowerPoint or Excel yet. So that is going to be Very, very interesting. But well, when we talk about those four pillars, you started off talking about processes. How do we keep our processes efficient as we start scaling FP&A?
Yeah, it's a challenge we face, not just in FP&A, but business-wide, right? Keeping those processes efficient. And I think it starts with making sure you have people that have a growth mindset, right? If you have people that are just there to do the job and aren't thinking efficiency, your processes are going to become a mess over time. It's just a given as you scale, because your processes have to change. So I always like to say it starts with having people and a culture that it's a growth mindset. Then there's just the blocking and tackling. You have to have documentation. I will admit I've been bad at it. So, you know, I can't say I'm a documentation expert, but if you document things and have those flow charts, it makes it much easier to have those discussions, say, is this the way things should still work? If you're spending 3-4 times as much time as you were before on a task, you need to stop and ask yourself, okay, there's probably something wrong here, and have that conversation of how do I streamline this? And so I think it's really, it's a mindset and a culture of being willing to continuously innovate, in addition to making sure you do the documentation, you have the flow chart, you have those things that allow you to look at your processes, to allow somebody to come in and analyze it and say, how can we be more efficient? And so for me, the biggest thing is it's a continuous process. It's not a one-time activity. We so often talk about transformation, and it's really more evolution. And that's true with processes and technology.
Yeah. But Catherine, you've been on the sharp end of some of this. You've probably got the experience and the scars to go with it. Where have you found the pitfalls are?
Oh, so many. And I absolutely agree with everything that Paul just said. I think we could have a whole podcast just on this, Kevin, but let me try and keep it short and sweet. I think actually reflecting on COVID and that situation, yeah, it really highlighted some of those process inefficiencies and challenges. Here we were in a situation where all expectations had gone out of the window. Nobody really knew what was going to happen. And what we really needed to do was think more broadly, run scenarios, look at real-time data, or as close to real-time as we could feasibly get. But our processes were bottlenecks. And what happens then is that you shortcut them. You take a top-down view with a load of limitations because you need an answer. And, you know, I could talk about automation, mapping processes, data flows, and all those things would be really valid. But I think what's most important is exactly what Paul said. It comes back to mindset and culture. So you give people permission to challenge. I can recall a number of examples of processes that were followed where people can't even explain anymore what's the purpose, why is it done in that way, or consider whether there might be a better approach at risk when we don't continually revisit our processes along the way. And reward that process improvement, create a culture of curiosity and always questioning how we do things rather than getting lost in the process and just thinking that's the way that things have always been done. We tend to see a lot of that, unfortunately.
So, Paul, any practical advice from you on how we can unpick the myriad of spreadsheets and processes around them that we've built over time? Because putting a new system in, that must be primarily what you're trying to unpick, is all those things you've done in a spreadsheet in the past.
As I like to say, what do you call a broken spreadsheet? The new employee's problem. So we've all been there. I think there's two ways to look at it. And first is stepping back and instead of unpicking the spreadsheet is saying, how should the flow work? Starting with understanding how should we be modeling? What do we need a tool to do? Because the reality, unless you have really good processes, most spreadsheets out there are broken and they're not efficient. I really like something in Schnorr, who's the executive director of the Financial Modeling Institute, said. He goes, far and away, the number one problem is poor design. It can almost always comes back to poor design. There's not a close second when it comes to models. So they're usually designed poorly. And so I think if you're looking to transfer your planning process to a system, it's better to look at and say, how should this process work? What do I need? What systems do I need? How should I be forecasting revenue? Focusing on those drivers and assumptions versus trying to unpick the spreadsheets and the myriad of spreadsheets, because usually they're fraught with errors and everybody's taking shortcuts. And it's just, it ends up being almost worse to try to say, hey, I just want to port what's in my spreadsheet to my tool. And I'll give an example. So this is 2009, 2010. I was working in a reporting function and we were implementing a BI tool. And we tried to take all our reports and just port them straight to the BI tool without making changes. It's a different platform. It's a different system. The usage and adoption was extremely low. People would have rather had it in Excel if we're just going to give them what we had in Excel because it was easier to use. And so really, we didn't get adoption until they rethought how we implement these reports. What's the right way to have those reports in a different platform? And I think there's some truth to that, to modeling as well. So I think it's really thinking about what data do I need? What drivers? What assumptions? What capabilities? Versus trying to unpick that mess of spreadsheets that, unless the person who built it is still there, is going to be a nightmare. And probably even if they are there, it still might be a nightmare.
I've always found that when you're trying to bring something in different, that amount of change, those individuals involved in it, you've got to be showing them what's in it for them. Okay, we know what's in it for the company, but what's in it for those individuals? Because as you say, quite often, if you just implement the spreadsheet in the new system, well, it was a lot easier to use the spreadsheet.
Exactly.
Yeah. I suppose just in closing, reflecting on this conversation and your experience, and this question goes to both of you, the one key piece of advice that you'd give to a finance director or head of FP&A considering introducing a new tool, what's that one piece of advice? Catherine, I'll start with you.
I would just come back to that point of doing the pre-work.
Yeah.
You know, there's the more, you know, perhaps more obvious directly related work on the system itself, but look at the bigger picture. Invest the time in the data. Don't run before we can walk, because no FP&A tool or machine learning or process is going to be its most effective without a solid foundation.
Cool.
Agree with everything Catherine said there. I think pre-work is critical. Now, I had a couple other things. Start small. You don't need to implement the whole thing at once. You could start with just reporting or just dashboarding and build over time so you get that adoption. The second thing I'll say is make sure you've done your homework, like Catherine said. You've done all that pre-work. And that pre-work includes making sure your people and processes are in a good place. Technology is an enabler, not a solution. And I think it's very important people remember that. And the last thing is, don't get caught up in all the bells and whistles. If you've done your homework and you've done your pre-work, remember what you need from a tool and don't go, oh, wow, it can do this, so I want it. Because often when you do that, you end up with the tool that really didn't meet your requirements and you have some functionality you're probably not going to use, but looks cool. And that serves nobody in the end, except for the sales guy who probably got a good commission. But outside of that, it doesn't serve anyone.
Yeah, and that's it. I think I'd go in and say, be absolutely clear on your requirements before you go talking to that sales guy. Because the sales guy will tell you 9 times out of 10 that his product will do, or her product will do, everything that you want.
Very true.
Experience says that will not be the case. There'll be products that are best suited for all of those requirements. So be absolutely clear on what those requirements are, which I guess a subset of those is all that pre-work that we were talking about, Catherine, on having the right KPIs and so on already thought through.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, it may be an unpopular view, but don't shortcut that.
Absolutely. So, Paul, thoroughly looking forward to getting our hands on this latest edition of the guide. The last one was brilliant. I know that when we put the last one out, you came along and did a Future Finance Functions webinar with us. And that was a fascinating piece that maybe that's something we should line up for the future. But for now, Paul Barnhurst, the FP&A guy, thank you for being this week's special guest on the Grow CFO show. And thank you again, Catherine, for the second of this, It's a trilogy in four parts, if you count the webinar, isn't it?
Thanks, Kevin. We'll
be back next time with a look at FP&A in acquisition. Looking forward to it.
Thank you for having me. Enjoyed chatting with you, Kevin and Catherine. It was my pleasure.